Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. 13 minutes to go ahead of the close on this Thursday, February 2nd. The jobs report tomorrow. U.S. equities little changed right now with the S&P up 1 point to 2280. Dow Industrials down 7, a drop there of less than 0.1% to 19,883. NASDAQ down 7 to 5634, a drop of 0.1%. The 10-year down 1/32, that yield 2.48%. Gold up 9.20 the ounce to 12.17, a gain there of 0.8%. Crude oil pulling back today. West Texas Intermediate, it is down 23 cents a barrel, 53.65, a drop there of 0.4%. Brent crude down 0.3%. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
All right, Charlie, thanks so much. It is time for the Bloomberg ETF report. Let's bring in Bloomberg's Catherine Cowdery.
It's an ETF with a descriptive name, and it was a nominee for Best New ETF of 2016 at the Inside ETFs Conference. It's a Fidelity Dividend ETF for Rising Rates, or FDRR. It was launched last September and has about $64 million in total assets. Tony Rochde, president of Selecto, a division of Fidelity's asset management business, says this is a factor-based ETF.
It invests in dividend-paying equities that are correlated to the 10-year Treasury yield, and so that if rates do rise, it could potentially cushion the equity dividend paying exposure.
Rochde says the other three core factors in FDRR include dividend yields, payout ratio, and dividend growth over time. The ETF is targeting a dividend yield of 3.5% to 3.75%. It's seen inflows of about $5.4 million over the past week and $12 million since the start of the year. That's your Bloomberg ETF report. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
All right, Catherine, thank you so much. This is Bloomberg Markets. I want to bring back our guest, Jim O'Shaughnessy, Chairman, CEO, and Chief Investment Officer at O'Shaughnessy Asset Management. $5.4 billion in assets under management based in Stamford, Connecticut, in our Bloomberg 1130 studio. I want to talk active versus passive, but somebody tweeted out and they said, highest corporate tax rate, but very few companies pay that rate, which is true. It's actually below 25%. So how does lowering the rate help?
I think if they get it down to under 20, it would help a lot with repatriating a lot of cash.
It would make a difference.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. I want to talk active versus passive because you've been looking at this, and it has been a subject of something we've been talking about a lot at Bloomberg, in that this whole idea that maybe active management just doesn't work anymore.
So I think active management still works. However, I have come to the conclusion after 30 years doing this and seeing clients' behavior that just continue to repeat itself, that I believe that the majority of investors lack the emotional characteristics and the personality traits that allow them to go on to become successful investors. Therefore, I've come
meaning
to
they're reactionary?
Yes. I've come to the conclusion that to do the best over time, let's say for the most common saving for retirement, the majority of investors should go completely passive. Because if they go completely passive, they really only have one point of failure, assuming they have a well-diversified portfolio on the equity side and on the bond side. That point of failure is panicking near a market low and selling out, okay? Active investors have two points of failure. The first is the same as passive investors, panicking and selling out. But the second is one we see happen much more often, and that is
chasing
and firing a manager who's underperforming, sometimes over as little as 3 years. And so even if they're getting positive returns, right? So they earn 10% over the previous 3 years. The benchmark earns 12, and they say, well, this is awful. I'm going to fire that manager. Well, guess what? A study that you can find at my friend Josh Brown's Reform Broker found that the managers you fire go on to outperform the managers you hire.
Really?
On the active side.
What's the thinking about
that? Well, regression to the mean. And so what I think is that the minority who possess the right kind of personality traits can do very well with active management, but that many people really just don't have those traits. And, you know, we can blame evolution. right? Evolution has us focusing on what is happening right now, mm-hmm. right? Because our ancient
it's
ancestors.
It's like being a teenager.
Exactly.
It's all about me right now.
Exactly. Our ancient ancestors, right? Who did we get the genes from? The one who saw the bush rustling and ran away?
Right.
Or the one who just said, oh, that's nothing?
Right.
Well, we got it from the one who ran away, because a lot of times it was a tiger and the other guy died and his gene pool didn't go on. So that's created within us this idea that we vastly overweight what's happening right now, as opposed to the very long term. You know, Cliff Asness, the co-founder mm-hmm. of AQR, had a great quote, which was basically along the lines of, having and sticking to a true long-term perspective is the closest thing you're going to get to possessing an investor superpower. And my belief is most don't have that.
But what about underperformance in a world where there are still some fees? Like, why would you do that?
Well, I think that gets to my next
point. Even if you say longer term.
Yeah, that gets to my next point, which is people who are going to succeed as active investors, the process is much more important to them than the outcome, right? And by that, I mean they want to understand the process that led to the performance.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good process? Is it a bad process? If it's a good one and it leads to temporarily a bad result, they're going to maybe be able to understand, you know what? Let's look at the longer term record of this particular manager. And when they look at the longer term, they might see a fantastic long term return. Every active manager is going to underperform for certain periods of time. And the one I highlighted as having a process, one person who was familiar with what I was writing said, well, Jim, you're a quant. Of course, everything is process.
Right.
But then I got to thinking about it and I thought, well, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, right?
Right.
Berkshire Hathaway, they have a very delineated process. You know, they want recognizable brands which have wide moats. They want simple, easy to understand companies and products. They want consistent, solid earnings gains. They want low debt, and they want good return on equity. This is their checklist, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't find it, they don't buy. But, and yet, if you were approaching Berkshire Hathaway, right? And by the way, 10,000 invested in Berkshire Hathaway Class A at the beginning of 1977 grew to 27.4 million.
And it's crazy.
The same 10,000 in the S&P was 208. Yet, if you were one of those guys who fired somebody for underperformance in 1999, Buffett's stock was 7.6% worse than the S&P for the previous 3 years. 3.76% worse than the S&P for the previous 5 years. And you remember all the articles?
Yeah.
Buffett used to have it, but he doesn't have it anymore. What did Buffett do? Buffett did nothing. He stuck to the underlying principles that had done so well for him, which I believe is another hallmark of successful long-term active investors. That's really hard to do. And yet, I believe that investors who do have that emotional makeup, mm-hmm. who can understand that their emotions are the worst thing in the world for them. There was a great quote from a guy who wrote a book on the difference
Jim came so prepared today. I'm just telling you, everybody.
Well, I'm also writing this.
I know you
so
are.
As I told you, you're getting the first look at this. There was a guy who looked at the idea that essentially we're running 21st century software on a 50,000-year-old hardware system.
Yeah.
That's our brain.
Yeah.
Right? And so another research paper done in Sweden, and you can tweet me at JP O'Shaughnessy. I'll send you the link to this study. It was done in Sweden, and it was done on identical twins. And what the researchers concluded was that up to 50% of the way we invest is genetic and is impervious to education. Now, wow, just get your head around that. And so the reason I'm coming to this point of view is, obviously, I want investors to do great, right? And I believe that the majority who might not understand and might deny that they have this emotional impulse, or that they believe that they're long-term investors, and yet their actions demonstrate they are not. That's the type of person.
Because they're reacting,
yes.
And then they're making trades based off of that.
When you overweight the short term, you create a reactionary model as opposed to an anticipatory one, right? What's a better model? An anticipatory model. The only way you can do that is to understand the underlying process very thoroughly, like I just went through with Buffett. And by the way, a host of other great investors.
Basically, so if there's a formula that works
and they can stick to it.
You just stick to it. So that even when there's bouts of volatility or we have a financial crisis or something, that ultimately it still pays. So are you in favor of active?
I am in favor of active investing for a minority of investors out there today. The ones that do have those emotional frameworks and those personality traits that really allows them to, as Cliff says, have these superpowers. I think from just all the studies I've read and from my own personal experience in 30 years, the majority don't have that and will do ultimately better off just indexing.
Just about 30 seconds. So let's go back to where we started. And you talked about back in March of 2009, how you were telling investors, right, to take a look at the market, that there are some great opportunities. Just quickly, so where are we now?
Well, where we are right now is the United States we view as sort of fully priced. If earnings can continue to do well, then that full pricing isn't horrible.
Mm-hmm.
We think international markets are much cheaper. We think emerging markets are the cheapest. But of course, we always know that when you get into the cheapest, it gets scary and it gets hairy. There's a great quote that is, the treasure that you seek is in the cave you are afraid to enter.
Oh my God. On that ominous note or interesting note, we will leave it there. This was fun.
Always fun with you, Carol.
Active versus passive. I love that. Jim O'Shaughnessy, Chairman, Chief Executive Officer, Chief Investment Officer at O'Shaughnessy Asset Management, joining us right here on Bloomberg Radio.